I'm not worried about what you're doing in your house or with your body. Why are you so worried about me?
I loved him ever since he was not him.
Lots of people believe lots of falsehoods about LGBTQ people. That we are predators and sinners and perverts. That we say we're LGBTQ just to be trendy. That we choose to be LGBTQ and that we could easily choose not to be.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Georgian protests mount in anti-Tbilisi pride violence aftermath, growing up trans with Jack and Yaya, and AIDS history and context empowers queer kids. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news interaffecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending July 17, 2021. The death of Georgian TV cameraman Alexander Lashkarova has fueled the ongoing unrest since Tbilisi's aborted Pride March. Lashkarova was beaten senseless when an ultranationalist mob, intent on ransacking the Pride organizers' offices, turned on journalists at the scene for allegedly spreading gay propaganda. At least 50 journalists were attacked as they covered an anti-queer march backed by the Orthodox Church. Violent protests also disrupted a Pride Week queer film festival. 6 days after the cameraman was released from the hospital, Lashkarova's body was found by his mother. Georgian police seized his corpse soon thereafter, despite his family's objections, fearing a government cover-up. The Ministry of Internal Affairs alleged in a statement that he had purchased psychotropic drugs and disposable syringes just hours before his death. Now there are calls for the current government to resign over the bloodshed. Vato Tsiratelli was Lashkarova's boss at TV Pirveli. At one street protest, he accused Prime Minister Irakli Garibashvili of being personally responsible for the cameraman's death.
But Prime Minister Garibashvili ignored the demands for his resignation. Several journalists invaded the parliament building to protest his resistance the day after their July 12th deadline. Scuffles broke out between lawmakers from the ruling Georgian Dream Party and opposition MPs. Security officers forcibly removed the journalists and offending opposition lawmakers from the building, and order was restored. Four TV stations in Georgia went dark on July 15th to reinforce demands for Garibashvili's resignation. Mataravi Arki, Formula, and Kavkasia channels joined Lashkarova's own TV Pirveli, going off the air for 24 hours. The following day, police officials raided the home of a far-right politician, a prominent media figure, and an Orthodox Church official in connection with the anti-queer violence. According to local reports, all three men were released without charge after 6 hours of questioning. Prime Minister Garibashvili continues to reject calls for his resignation, both domestic and foreign. He blames the violence on equality activists for being unreasonable. In his view, the desire to parade peacefully with LGBTQ pride itself creates a threat of civil confrontation.
The European Commission is turning the screws on Hungary and its neighbor Poland for their anti-queer governance. The Commission took initial steps towards sanctions against both countries this week. Hungary has thus far weathered global criticism over a recently enacted no-promo-homo law that bans queer-positive information in schools or on television. Leaders of more than half of the EU member states have strongly condemned the Hungarian law. Poland is under fire for overtly supporting proclamations by more than 100 local governments declaring themselves to be LGBT-free zones. The European Union's executive branch warned that the Polish declarations may violate EU law regarding non-discrimination on the grounds of sexual orientation. A statement by the Commission vowed that Europe will never allow parts of our society to be stigmatized. Poland and Hungary each have 2 months to respond to the charges. Both face large fines for failing to adequately defend their anti-queer measures. Meanwhile, the European Court of Human Rights ruled this week in a case challenging Russia's marriage inequality that the country must recognize same-gender couples. However, Hungary's leader Viktor Orban, Poland's Andrzej Duda, and Russia's Vladimir Putin have never complied with EU directives
they don't like.
Israel's Supreme Court has opened access to fertility and surrogacy services to same-gender couples. Justices issued a ruling this week determining that the government has failed to meet the deadline they established in a 2020 decision. The court ruled then that a law to expand access to single women but excluding single men and queer couples disproportionately harmed their right to equality and the right to parenthood. The justices wrote that, since the state has done nothing to advance an appropriate amendment to the law, the court ruled that it cannot abide the continued serious damage to human rights caused by the existing surrogacy arrangement. They set the ruling to take effect in 6 months to allow for the preparation of professional guidelines dealing with the expanded access. Israeli LGBTQ activist group, the Aguda, celebrated the decision as a historic landmark in our struggle for equality.
Two trans women in Cameroon, jailed for attempted homosexuality, were set to be released on July 16th as an appeal of their convictions moves forward. Loïc Njoukam is the legal name of Shakiro, a popular online fashion celebrity. Defendant Roland Moot is her friend Patricia, who was having lunch with her in February at a restaurant in the coastal city of Douala. They were arrested for public indecency and attempted homosexuality, presumably for wearing women's clothing. They were also unable to produce legal identification. They are being represented by Alice Nkom, a well-known advocate for LGBTQ people in Africa. She told Reuters that they are going to leave this prison hell where they don't belong and where they risk extreme violence every day. The appeal of their 5-year prison sentence will be heard in September. Human Rights Watch has warned that Shakiro and Patricia's arrests seem to be part of an overall uptick in police action against sexual minorities this year in the West Central African country.
Life for LGBTQ people in neighboring Nigeria might be getting even worse. This week, 5 men in their early 20s were arrested in a special raid in the state of Kano for suspected homosexuality. Apparently, the neighbors had complained. Kano is one of the Nigerian states that impose Islamic Sharia law penalties on top of what secular law dictates. Sharia condemns sodomy as carnal intercourse against the order of nature with any man or woman. In addition to a 1-year prison term under the country's secular laws, they each face 100 lashes of the cane if they're unmarried. If any of the convicts are married, they could be stoned to death.
Minnesota's Democratic Governor Tim Walz is using an executive order to ban conversion therapy. Walz took it on himself to break a legislative logjam when the bill passed by the Democratic-controlled House failed in the Republican-controlled Senate. The order bolsters local ordinances in a number of Minnesota cities, but does not ban conversion therapy in the state outright. Only the legislature can do that. However, the executive order prohibits public funds from being used to support it. In the governor's words, that will ensure that no Minnesotan under 18 is subjected to this Byzantine torturous practice. Conversion therapy claims to straighten out queer people through counseling and/or prayer. Virtually every professional medical and mental health organization condemns the practice as ineffectual at best. At worst, it does real damage to a victim's already fragile mental health.
Another Democratic governor is citing a recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling to veer away from queer rights. That's how Kentucky's Andy Beshear justified removing anti-LGBTQ bias provisions from a state contract with the Baptist-affiliated Sunrise Children's Services. The High Court decision narrowly supported the right of a Roman Catholic adoption and fostering agency in Philadelphia to reject parenting applications from same-gender couples on religious grounds. Kentucky is one of several states to dole out some social services through private agencies. According to the Associated Press, Sunrise was established during the Civil War to care for orphans, and it has contracted with the state for more than 50 years.
A federal judge has blocked a particularly loathsome Tennessee law. It requires businesses to post warning signs if they allow trans people to use the restroom that aligns with their gender identity. U.S. District Judge Alita A. Trauger granted a preliminary injunction preventing the law from taking effect. She determined that the plaintiffs were likely to succeed on their challenge on constitutional grounds. The Tennessee law is one of several anti-trans laws to be tested in courts across the country.
Finally, one of the biggest stories in the U.S. this week has been the flight of Texas Democratic lawmakers from the state to deny the Republican-controlled legislature a quorum. Their action is an effort to block passage of odious laws to restrict voting rights. But there's a little-noticed bonus for equality activists. The Democrats' walkout also stalls two bills to prevent transgender girls and women from competing in school sports. They will almost certainly pass if Republican Governor Greg Abbott and his political cronies eventually succeed in bringing them to a formal vote during the special session he's called. The queer advocacy group Equality Texas is fighting the uphill battle against the anti-trans measures. They roasted Republicans for brazenly prioritizing attacks on transgender children.
That's NewsWrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending July 17th, 2021. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can read the transcript and listen to NewsWrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out radio channel on YouTube. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V. Stay healthy.
And I'm Wenzel Jones. Stay safe.
Today, in high school, we learn about HIV/AIDS as just another sexually transmitted infection. But schools don't teach us about the devastating effects of AIDS on the LGBTQ community, because for the most part, schools teach little, if anything, about our community.
AIDS beyond the ABCs, later in the program. Political attacks stigmatizing transgender kids are all the rage with U.S. Republican legislators these days. A very different picture of trans coming of age is captured in a PBS World Channel film about lifelong friends who have gone through it all side by side. John Dyer V tells us more.
We would play house. It was great because, like, she would be the mom, I'd be the dad. We had no problems. It was just great.
I'm proud of being trans. I want people to look at me and just be like, damn, she went through hell and she's okay. I can be okay too.
I'm trying to be Christina. I'm not worried about what you're doing in your house or with your body. Why are you so worried about me?
Pride Month has passed, but our community and personal pride remain constant. Last month saw the broadcast premiere of an engaging film, Jack and Yaya, that was part of a documentary series called America Reframed. It airs on the digital multicast World Channel, which is a public TV network from the WGBH Educational Foundation. We meet the titular Jack and Yaya, best friends who grew up next door to each other in a somewhat rural-looking suburb of New Jersey, and have been friends for over 30 years. Jack and Yaya are both transgender, and we get a close-up view of their childhoods, families, and their journeys to personal expression and fulfillment. It is not always an easy trip, but their friendship provides mutual strength and support that too many others never had during their transition.
We basically were kind of raised together a lot of the time because my parents were so young.
And so were mine.
I think the reason why we were such good friends when we were younger is because of who we actually are today.
A story like this is probably not what could be called a common one, and there is a sense of something like predestiny when learning about these two youngsters. A little boy and girl become friends at a very young age. Both kids know that they are meant to be something else than what they are, but they also recognize the same thing happening to the other person, their best friend. That is a unique perspective between two people, and that kind of bond is one that most people in a more tolerant world might admit to wanting. Directed and produced by Jen Bagley, who was also the director of photography, this is a traditional Talking Heads documentary, and it qualifies as a slice-of-life piece of postmodern Americana. What could be more free than two families fully embracing the honest expression of gender and sexual identity taking place within both families? And these families are quite interesting, including Jack's all-accepting and loving uncle.
I love everyone. I love life itself.
And I just shot at the jacket.
Boom. I loved him ever since he was not him.
Remarkably, among the siblings, parents, and other relatives of both Jack and Yaya, there is complete support for the two friends and for their attempts to live their most authentic lives, including surgical transitions, which are costly, difficult, and painful. It's nice to watch a story like this and not be steeped in tragedy at every turn. Amiable, heartwarming, and sometimes sassy, this is very much a 21st century tale. The America Reframed series offers uniquely independent documentaries that seek to examine the contours of an ever-evolving America and to seek new frameworks for America's future. In the case of this film, we see the personal side of issues that are currently being manipulated by politicians and others who scapegoat those less powerful individuals simply trying to live their own lives. To watch this video and the America Reframed series, you can go to the PBS app online or to worldchannel.org. This is a great way to learn about and support your local community, as well as the community at large. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
Are you signed up for our new e-newsletter, Inside This Way Out?
We send them out every few weeks, briefly reviewing recent and previewing upcoming programming and deepening the conversation about your favorite international LGBTQ radio show.
All you have to do is email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And be assured that we don't share or sell your email address or anything about you to anyone else, and we never will.
Again, to receive the occasional Inside This Way Out, and let us know you're listening, email us at info@thiswayout.org.
There are thousands dying tonight. Some say they chose their own scripts. Blame them, shame them, drugs denied. The sickness, the hate, and the side by side by side with the hope unfed until the balance tips. They wait in shadow. They live what they know with a prayer on their lips.
That other global pandemic is still a deadly threat, and it was first reported in the mainstream media 40 years ago this month. Today's high school students are taught how not to get AIDS, but they don't get the history with its full context of homophobia and generational devastation. The queer youth commentators of Outcasting Overtime think that what's left out could be just as life-saving as the safe sex education they receive.
This is Outcasting Overtime from Media for the Public Good, creator of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Hi, I'm Lil, an Outcasting Youth participant. On Friday, July 3rd, 1981, 40 years ago this month, the New York Times published an article deep inside the paper headlined "Rare Cancer Seen in 41 Homosexuals." It was the first article in the mainstream press about what we now know as HIV/AIDS. There had been some progress in public acceptance for gay people in the 1970s, roughly the dozen years following the Stonewall Uprising. The American Psychiatric Association declassified homosexuality as a mental illness in 1973. Activist groups took hold, working hard to destigmatize gay people and address our community's lack of civil rights protections. But then, young gay men started dying of these weird diseases. It took time for the cause to be found, a virus we now know as HIV, and for people to understand how it was spread. In those early years, most cases in the United States were in gay men, but that wasn't the case in other places in the world, where the disease was often transmitted heterosexually. For a time, the syndrome was actually called GRID, gay-related immunodeficiency disease. It was terrible. For many, a diagnosis was nearly a death sentence. Often, people who worked in hospitals wouldn't even enter the room of an AIDS patient, leaving meals outside in the hall to get cold. Funeral homes would refuse to accept the bodies of those who died. In the United States, AIDS was first noticed in gay men, and this led people to vilify them for bringing this deadly new disease into the US. AIDS gave people a whole new reason to hate gay people, and a huge new wave of homophobia blasted the country. But the government largely ignored AIDS as it grew from a few dozen cases to hundreds to thousands, because it was mainly infecting gay men, and why should the government care about them? President Ronald Reagan, who was notoriously homophobic, didn't publicly even say the word AIDS during those critical early years when the epidemic might have been checked, if only the government had cared about the people who were getting sick. Today, in high school, we learn about HIV/AIDS as just another sexually transmitted infection. We're taught how to avoid it just as we're taught to avoid other STIs. But schools don't teach us about the devastating effects of AIDS on the LGBTQ community, because for the most part, schools teach little, if anything, about our community. Our education is filtered through a lens of whiteness and straightness, so we don't learn about the terrible context in which HIV/AIDS occurred, especially in the most deadly years of the 1980s and 90s, or about how HIV had, and continues to have, even worse impacts on communities of color. This lack of education about such a critical event in LGBTQ history leaves many young people, LGBTQ and straight, unaware that it happened at all. For those of us who are LGBTQ, it makes it seem that teachers and other adults in our lives don't care that it happened. This brings up a larger issue. In most of the country, LGBTQ history is intentionally erased from public school curricula. LGBTQ Nation reports that last month, Nevada became only the sixth state to require that school curricula include history lessons on LGBTQ people and historic events. California was the first to end the exclusion. And several years ago, we talked with the California State Senator, Mark Leno, who sponsored the bill to include LGBTQ history in public schools. You can listen to that program on our website, outcastingmedia.org. Why is it important for all of us, not just LGBTQ students, but all of us, to learn this history? Think about the Black Civil Rights Movement. It's filled with names we've all heard of. Martin Luther King Jr., Rosa Parks, Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall, and too many others to name. When schools teach students about these people and the movement, it makes students, all students, understand that it wasn't just some agitators who thought they had been discriminated against, who were trying to get more rights, even though that's how it was often seen. It was an organized movement of strong people who had historically and brutally been denied their civil rights, working to claim their share of the American promise of equality. Black students gain self-respect as they learn about this, but of course, the benefits aren't limited to them. Everyone learns that the Black Civil Rights Movement was something to be respected and valued, a movement full of heroes. And although that certainly hasn't eliminated prejudice against Black people, there's no question that it's created a very different and much better reality, not only for Black people, but for everyone. But when LGBTQ history is erased, that public acceptance just doesn't happen for us. Lots of people believe lots of falsehoods about LGBTQ people, that we are predators and sinners and perverts, that we say we're LGBTQ just to be trendy, that we choose to be LGBTQ, and that we could easily choose not to be. We experience the same rejections and inequalities that are experienced by all people who are considered others, people outside the straight white mainstream. And yet our minority is different because our differences involve sexuality and gender, which some people in so-called polite society don't like to talk about, especially when those discussions include young people like me. There are lots of heroes in AIDS activism, but we don't learn about them. We don't learn about the terrible stigma around AIDS and how that affected so many people so horribly. We don't learn about the LGBTQ women who became AIDS activists, even though lesbians were at the lowest risk of actually catching the disease. We don't learn how heroically all sorts of people in our community pulled together and worked not only to take care of each other, but also to push the government and medical authorities to work for treatments. This lack of acknowledgement and education about such a critical point in LGBTQ history is dehumanizing for LGBTQ youth. Few young people know about the epidemic and the effect it had on our community. The lack of time, consideration, education, care, and acknowledgement of such a devastating event in our history makes us feel isolated and unrecognized. This lack of context and lack of teaching about LGBTQ history in general hides the fact that just like other discriminated against minorities, LGBTQ people have been fighting for equal rights for decades. Erasing that from our education makes it harder to see our own lives in context, and we need to see ourselves and our community to see that context. And a lot of non-LGBTQ kids, straight, cisgender kids, also don't know about it because it's not taught. They don't see the larger context in which LGBTQ people exist, so there's nothing to lift up their perceptions of the LGBTQ people they actually know, and make them aware of the inequalities we still face. Schools have a responsibility here. Students learn best when we feel safe and supported, and making education more inclusive would improve the learning experience of LGBTQ students. But even more importantly, we all need to learn about civil rights struggles, and this includes learning about the history of LGBTQ people. Come on, schools. We need you to do better. Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, from Outcasting Media, creator of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Outcasting Media is created by Media for the Public Good, based in New York. This piece was created by the Outcasting team, including Rose, Jada, Isha, Justin, Charlotte, Nadja, Sasha, Timothy, and me, Lil. Our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and related content. You can also find Outcasting on Radio Public, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Audible, and other major podcast sites. Thanks, and thanks for listening. The poison, the greed, and the love side by side by side. But the love survives until the balance dips. We wait and share. We live what we know. With a prayer on our lips until the balance dips.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Wenzel Jones and John Dyer V, produced by Brian DeShazer, from John Dyer V wearing his features producer hat, and from Outcaster Lil, produced by Mark Sofis. Some of the music you heard came from the Annie movie soundtrack and from John Buchino. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, a bequest from Christopher David Trentum, donors Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KICI Iowa City, Iowa, WLSL St. Leo, Dade City, Florida, 2CHR Cessnock, New South Wales, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.